Welcome everyone to Under the Ginkgo Tree, a project of the Degnan Institute for Earth and Spirit at Iona University. For today's episode, we are joined by Edgar Hayes and Ann Rader, the co-founders of Freedom Farm Community in Mount Hope, New York. Edgar and Ann are people who are deeply rooted in a particular place, the place of Freedom Farm, and they are simultaneously connected to a sprawling web of communities and movements committed to ecology and social justice. Edgar and Ann have learned over the years to live into the rhythms of the land while growing food to give it away. Inspired by Edgar and Ann's rootedness in a particular place, we close this episode with a chant called Put Your Roots Down. And as we always do, we open this episode by rooting ourselves on campus, by lifting up a particular plant. And for today's episode, we'd like to lift up the Ruby Falls Weeping Redbud Tree. So we have this tradition at Iona to celebrate the Feast of St. Francis every fall. And part of this festival is the blessing of the animals. So some students will bring their pets to campus and we'll have them blessed. And then we'll also plant a tree. That's an annual ritual. And the plant that we wanted to identify for today's episode is the tree that we planted for last Francis Festival. So this is called the Ruby Falls Weeping Redbud Tree. And it's planted right out in front of the Murphy Center, where I believe you taught your classes this past semester. Yeah. So you passed that tree frequently. I just saw the tree recently. And, you know, I found that whenever I identify a tree, I pause before it. Mm. You know, and I remember Kimmerer talked about, you know, knowing the name of a tree, it's like a gateway to, or a doorway to presence. You know, and so I was just struck the other day that I paused there and kind of had this memory of planting the tree with the students. You know, for some of those students, it was their first experience planting a tree. And there's something just like tangibly powerful about being involved in an action like that. So this Ruby Falls Weeping Redbud Tree has these really gorgeous, the last time I saw the colors change. And most recently, they were kind of like this deep purple, almost like a plum color. Yeah. And it was just, kind of marvelous to see it after it had filled out. Because when we planted it, you know, it was pretty barren. It looked gorgeous. Yeah, I'm just thinking of that tree as a doorway to presence, you know.
Yeah, I love that framing. And you're right, I did pass that tree, you know, every time I went to teach and when I would walk into that building. You know, we become a part of the story of that tree when we take place, when we're, you know, a part of planting it, right? And I think that's just so beautiful. So then, you know, as I walk past it and as the students walk past it, whether they're pausing in front of the tree, kind of as you brought up that that's your practice, or if they're not pausing, right, they are part of that tree story in a more deep way. Like you said, for some people, that's the first time they've been able to plant a tree.
Mm.
And it's just a beautiful way to, like, you know, embed ourselves within our landscape in a more kind of real, concrete way. We all kind of came together. And we, you know, people from facilities on campus were really helpful bringing the tree, kind of doing the hard labor of the planting. And so, you know, as a community, we're a part of planting that tree. Mm. And then we're a part of that story of that tree.
Yeah, totally. And just a couple more special points about this tree. It was deliberately chosen because it's a native species. So that has been a commitment on campus, is to focus on planting native species. The other interesting thing about the planting process itself is that the soil that we use to plant the tree came from our composting site on campus. Yeah. So that just kind of felt full circle that these food scraps from the cafeteria became this healthy, vibrant soil yes. that then we returned to right. the earth in order to nourish this tree, you know. Yeah. So symbolically, but also literally, this is like a ritual practice for rerooting ourselves in the earth and for like shifting our sense that we're not just passing through a space when we're on this campus, but we're inhabiting a place, you know, that, as you put it,
yeah.
like we're part of this story, we're building this story, we're weaving this story with our human and more than human kin. And it's a beautiful process to be a part of that. So it was a real joy to have Edgar and Anne on the podcast. Edgar Hayes and Anne Rader, who are the co-founders of Freedom Farm Community in Middletown, New York. I've been really blessed to be friends with Edgar and Anne. I think it was 2016, which is the first time I visited Agape Community in Massachusetts. Our friends, Suzanne and Brayton at Agape and the wider community there. I went for a work day. And Edgar and Anne have just been a major presence at Agape since they were in college. I know that Edgar traces his founding of Freedom Farm with Anne and a number of other collaborators to an epiphany that he had at Agape, where he was in St. Francis House, the main house on the land at Agape. Someone went out to the garden to bring in vegetables, and they made lunch then and there. And for Edgar, that was an epiphany, that such a thing could be possible, that there could be such a connection between like the product that would be consumed at lunch and the process, the agricultural process. And it literally planted a seed, you know, that he would want to pursue this with his life, that he would want to make this his life work with Anne. And the two of them just have done an incredible job of creating this place at Freedom Farm that is grounded in the Christian tradition, that is open to interreligious collaboration, and that is really committed to social justice, food justice specifically. We might call integral ecology this blending of justice work with efforts to promote sustainability. So Edgar has been a longtime collaborator. He's been to campus every semester since I started teaching at Iona. The students really love him. A group of Iona students went to visit his farm for an immersion a couple summers ago. This is part, this podcast episode is a snippet of really like a larger conversation that we've been having, you know, over the past almost 10 years. So I'm really happy to share it, and I hope you enjoy it. Today, you talked about going from chaos to community, mm-hmm. this kind of transformative journey that we have to make together. Could you talk about some of the communities that you're in collaboration with?
Mm-hmm. Well, our first ever community is always our family. I was the last of eight. So that's a tribe right there. And living with different personalities and different ideas and people bossing you around, and you had to learn to live together.
Yeah.
So that's always our first initiation into community. We just don't call it that. We call it family. And after I left St. John's, once I graduated from college, I went to the Vincentian Service Corps, which is a voluntary service for a year. And part of that service is to learn how to live in community with folks you don't know. And that can be hard. And it was a challenge. I knew from there, even though it, you know, had its ups and downs, I knew from there that that's how I wanted to live my life, in community. Mm. And we've lived in several different communities. I met Anne when I moved down to D.C. And she was in another community, Sojourners community.
Mm-hmm. And we met that October 95 when we were both working in Washington, D.C. And we both ended up working in Freedom Schools. I did mm-hmm. through Sojourners mm-hmm. and Eckert did after his voluntary service year. So that was a formative experience as well.
Too. Could you tell us a little bit more about Freedom Schools?
Well, Freedom Schools is a cultural enrichment summer program that started is now, but it started in the 60s during Freedom Summer, mm-hmm. where folks from the North went down south to help with voter registration because of the Jim Crow laws. They found separate but equal was not equal at all. So the education was poor, and voting and everything else was discriminatory towards African Americans and people of color. Mm-hmm. So when they went down to help with voter registration, they saw that the children were in need of better education, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but also, more importantly, they needed understanding in their cultural heritage. Mm. And to understand that we come from a wonderful, beautiful heritage beyond the enslavement period. Our culture and heritage did not began during slavery, and our African heritage is amazing.
So Edgar, you tell this really powerful story of going to this community as a college student at St. John's and kind of having this epiphany, having this awakening that planted a seed that would later be realized at Freedom Farm. So I wonder if you could both just talk a little bit about your kind of history at Agape, as well as your continued collaboration with the community.
Yeah, so way back in the early 90s, I went with my friend and campus minister to a college retreat on nonviolence at Agape. Mm. And one of the things they harped on is like, oh, they don't eat meat there. I was like, oh, good. I don't need to eat meat every time. So when we got there, some of the things that blew me away was someone going into the garden and picking food and serving it, cooking it up and then serving it as part of the meal for the weekend. Because I grew up in the city and you know, impoverished family, and we grew up with a lot of canned vegetables, canned green beans, canned corn, you know, canned peas, which is the worst. So that was new to me. That was revelatory to me to see that. And another aspect of the weekend, they spoke about nonviolence and understanding what violence is. Not just the physical, but how we see one another, how we view women, how we view one another and the world. So a lot of it was profound and definitely seed setting, but it took a it took a while to germinate and to create a seedling that would grow into what we now called Freedom Farm. Mm-hmm. But that's all it takes, is just a seed that's set, and eventually, you know, it'll grow into something, you know, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we had great experiences living in community through voluntary service, and mm-hmm. then we lived in Menno House, like a Mennonite-owned church house. But Agape really gave us a model of a community that was living out its faith. Mm-hmm. In their whole mm-hmm. lives, like mm-hmm. they had found a way to do that, and they challenged us in that way. So yes. In every way, for example, environmental justice, they had a grease car way back in the day. They were building a straw bale house. It was just really exciting to see them, see the creativity and an innovation and passion they had for mm-hmm. living out their faith in all these different ways, including honoring the earth. Mm-hmm. So that was a motivator, and they gave mm-hmm. us other really concrete tools, like by the time we were ready to start Freedom Farm, like, oh, here's a sample intern application. You know, we've already thought through all these things, questions that might be helpful. So that was great. Yeah. And definitely being there at the chapel, praying in a daily way, yes. That's what we were hungering for anyway. When we had been working at Freedom Schools in different places, they were amazing, but we were missing we wanted more of that
faith component.
And so that was something we found at Agape and learned from and wanted to incorporate daily prayer into our practice there or in the community we were about to form.
Beautiful.
Yes. And after my first retreat there, I went to subsequent retreats because what is this place? And then in 98, I interned at Agape. And that helped me to also form and to see and to gain wisdom on what community life is really like. Mm. So instead of creating a community, find this, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Find a community, live there, and learn from them before you move out into something else.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I think like one of the most powerful components of community, of intentional communities, is this intergenerational sharing of wisdom, of skills, of ideas across communities and building this community of communities. We just had the last St. Francis Day at Agape was devoted to that particular theme. So just as we continue to kind of unpack the relationship between Freedom Farm and this web of communities, I wonder if you could talk about some of the communities that are immediately proximate to you, such as Freedom Hill Farm, and the ways in which, you know, there's just collaborative cross-pollination that's happening there.
Yes.
And the ways in which that kind of stands as a sign of contradiction in a culture that might otherwise veer toward individualism or competition, right? Your approach, which is collaborative. Can you speak a little bit more to that?
Sure. Well, when we got to the farm, a guy in a black truck came over and he was like, what do you want to do with this land? And I had all these stereotypes like, uh-oh, this guy, you know, he was a big guy in a black truck, big white guy in a black truck. And I just was concerned that he wouldn't like us and our family. And we were bringing kids from the city. But when we told him we wanted to share food with people who didn't have access to it and were working on cultivating a ministry, he got so excited. He ran home and got his wife and daughter, and they brought over all these flowers. And he said, don't buy any equipment. And he was so it was just such a surprise. And even though we were actually coming from really different places politically and theologically, like, we had the faith connection in common, and from there grew. And so it has been a real blessing. Their cows graze on our land. They share milk and kefir and let young people come over and learn about the animals. They give us manure that helps grow the food. So that's been one collaboration. Also, there happened to be a Mennonite camp that works with young people from the city. They share labor, wood chips, young people. And we share food and working with the young people. And Otisville Mount Hope Presbyterian Church has grown to have a food pantry that we collaborate with. So these aren't things we created, but we're just so thankful to the Spirit for connecting us.
I wonder if you could give us a glimpse of what a day at Freedom Farm looks like. And could you give us a sense of the ways in which you've kind of evolved your idea of the farm and brought in new practices? Like, what did it look like at the beginning? And what does it look like now in 2025?
2005, it was just Anne, myself, and our two young boys. We had this idea of our friends, you know, all of us coming together and starting a farm ministry and living together. But as folks started having children, you know, that's like, I can't do that. So community life for us was the four of us and myself, Micah and Josiah, and the extended connections that we made. But we still grew food, and volunteers came, like the work was still done, but it was done on a very small scale because I was also doing full time work in the city. Now, another family has decided to join the community, which is wonderful, and so that. In that sense, community has expanded. They lived with us for almost 2 years, And now they moved away and live 10 minutes away. We get together, prayer in the morning, before the work is done, because that starts our day, because that's the foundation of why we do what we do, is our yeah. faith. So we will go to the afternoon until 12 and have lunch. What Anne and I have done, you know, we had set the practice of afternoon prayer, either going back out and doing more work or taking a nap and rest, and before, you know, the evening time where everything shuts down and dinner and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Next week we'll have a college group coming, and they'll help with harvesting and then sharing the food on Thursday with the local food pantry. So that's also part of the rhythm of each week, depending on who's coming, but we'll have a regular practice of sharing the harvest. And when Will and Sarah joined the community, they also brought their community connections along. So now Proyecto Faro is one of our partners in Rockland County, an immigrant rights group that we share a lot of food with. And Sule, who they knew, is another farmer now. And we've also become, we always were open to people of all faiths and welcoming, but now we actually have members and people who work with us, like Sule, one of the farmers, and Amira before him are Muslim. So our community, I think, is evolving in that way. Like, we'll each bring our own faith practices to the table. Like, we're not putting them away, but we're sharing them with one another.
Yes.
Yeah.
And seeing the commonality that is within them,
yeah,
versus looking at it in the sense of how different they are. You know, yes, they're different, but that's not basis of them where we put up walls as society does. Rather, we say, oh, we're different. And in that difference is beauty. So how do we share that beauty and commonality together?
And God is so big.
It's right.
Like, yeah.
Why would we not do that?
Absolutely. And isn't that sort of a key element of sustainable and healthy farming is diversity. I mean, you can't have a monoculture farm that is thriving. So there's ways in which, you know, maybe the invitation based on the wisdom of the land itself, you know, is to create spaces of unity in diversity, where the diversity isn't dissolved in, you know, everybody watering down their differences, but it's also not denied through, you know, as you put it, putting up walls. So how do we move toward King's vision of the beloved community, which is deep and wide? You know, we don't lose the depth, but we also endlessly can expand the scope of the circle, you know? So, and it, you're just, doing really beautiful work, building all of these collaborative allegiances, you know, in your particular area, and then with people who come visit, as well as just maintaining these really strong connections with places like Agape. I wonder if we could hear a little bit about the land itself. One of the things that we try to do on this podcast is think about our campus as an ecosystem. And really the invitation comes from Thomas Berry, who emphasized the importance of viewing the natural world as a communion of subjects rather than a collection of objects. Something that came up, Edgar, in your talk was that this is the season for harvesting maple and making maple syrup. So I wonder if you could talk about Freedom Farm itself, the land itself, what you learn from the land, how you listen to the land, how your farming practices have evolved over time.
So before we tap the trees for the maple syrup, we give thanks to the tree, and we ask the tree for its permission to tap. So we're not seeing the life of the land as objects, but plants are a part of the community that we can communicate with and have conversations with, the same as our house plants that we have communication and conversations with, and that makes it a thriving plant inside. We look for signs. It may be verbal, it may be visual, it may be of the spirit, but we have to ask permission first. Mm. And that gives reverence to the life essence of creation. And we have to see that and understand that, that we are all in this together. So how do we collaborate together? The land itself has trees, woods, it has rolling hills, it has wetlands and water running through it, a stream. We have to have reverence and to say the water, the land, the trees, the plants, even the animals that roam through it, has life that is precious and created by a creative being.
Mm.
But each thing is a being to be revered versus exploited.
Yeah, inherent value versus inherent instrumental.
Worth. Yes.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the word. Inherent worth. Yes. Mm.
Sometimes we do prayer walks, which is also a special kind of meditative time to just listen and take in the peace and see what the creatures are saying to us. And I feel like there's definitely, they're always speaking to us and showing us things, but especially sometimes, like I remember, and I've heard a lot of people say this too, like after my mom died, you know, just feeling like, oh, that, you know, that eagle that I got to see today, that reminds me of my mom. Like, she's here for me right now. She's showing up, and thank you, God. And that kind of connection through the land and your ancestors and the creator too can be something you experience.
Beautiful.
And there's something always, something to learn watching, just being in the space of creation.
Mm.
Even the stars are all a part of it. I'm watching the stars lately. I'm like, you're in a different alignment. And during the month of January, the planets were aligned. And like, what does this all mean? And what is this saying to me? But yeah, I would like to know more knowledge, more wisdom from creation is what I want.
Mm.
And looking at the life of a plant, what properties does this plant, let's say a plantain, which grows everywhere, or goldenrod, which grows everywhere, that we don't pay much attention to, what are you saying to me? And the plant is saying that, hey, I have these properties that can heal you. I have these properties that can, you know, boost your immune system or take care of a certain ailment.
Mm.
But you wouldn't know that if you're not reading up on it, learning about it, talking to it, you know, sitting with it, receiving knowledge first before you're extracting.
Mm.
And then, without always being extractive, what can I give to this plant?
Mm.
How can I build this plant up? Mm. You know, what can I make sure I don't put on this plant? You know, things like that is how this symbiotic relationship has to happen for us to understand that we and creation go hand in hand. And if one goes, the other is going to go.
Mm. My sense is that the wisdom that we get when we listen to the land is both profoundly spiritual as well as very practical.
Yes.
And I heard that emerge earlier in your talk where you talked about kind of the mycelial network that links trees together. And that, like, metaphorically, we can get a lot of wisdom from listening or learning from how trees share resources, share energy, etc., how they collaborate. But then quite literally and physically and practically, learning about the mycelial network has led you to move away from tilling the soil.
Yes.
Right. So that's both, you know, getting some metaphorical spiritual wisdom from learning about this mycelial network as well as really practical wisdom. And I just wonder if you could talk just a little bit more about ways in which, you know, as you've done this work of listening to the land, you've expanded the farm. So, you know, increasing the amount of hens that you have, and, you know, how do you interact with the hens? How do you live with them?
Well, I always wanted folks who receive food from the pantries, even though it's food, but it's, you know, processed food, high sodium foods. So I always felt that in some way they needed fresh produce, but they also needed high protein foods. So I wanted to have more chickens so we can give away more eggs. When I go into the chicken coop, I make sure, good morning. They're like, bah, 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 bah. They're doing their thing. Good morning, good morning. Feed them water, give them water. And in the afternoon when I collect the eggs, I gotta say, thank you for the eggs. Say thank you. That's a simple thing. Thank you. They're giving us their eggs and we're giving them food and water and shelter and protection. That reciprocity again. Knowing when, because in the beginning I was like, each year I'm gonna expand the garden, and I did. Each year I expanded the garden and grew something different. Until like, oh, okay, I can't expand anymore in this area. Building the hoop houses actually and allowed us to grow food in the winter, and we want to give food away in the winter months as well as the spring and summer months and fall months. So if we can grow food all year round, that helps us to grow, give away food and for folks that have fresh produce all year round.
Yeah.
Trying to be able to grow things more during the school year as well, in addition to the summer, to be able to share food then. But you're right, it is so important to us to keep up, just not to overtax the land. And we need to always be soil building. So we try to, when we mow the grass, put grass clippings on, compost the manure. It has to sit like 6 months. Practices like that to keep the soil healthy. And then also using drip irrigation to minimize water usage for watering. But we're always looking to learn more ways to do it in a way that's sustainable.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because the desire to expand and share more food with more people is there, but then also this desire of like expanding within a sustainable rhythm, by listening to the land and sensing, will the soil be able to take this, or should maybe we let the soil go to rest, which, I know that you do that every 7 years, right? Letting the soil lie fallow. And in the Jewish tradition, it's the Shemitah, the practice of really like Sabbath for the land itself, which is a beautiful practice and a beautiful expression of reciprocity. So I wonder, as we move toward the close of this conversation, if you could share three things: a book that you find particularly inspiring, a plant that you take wisdom from, a plant that inspires you, that has taught you something, as well as a ritual, some kind of practice that you return to as you attempt to remember your core identity as a creature of God, living in this web of life.
I learned so much from online learning, and I did have a lot of books that I got. The Long Road to a Tomato, Wendell Berry. There's so many books. Even though I haven't read the whole book, I read parts of it, so I can gain wisdom from it's a specific wisdom that I needed at the time. So it's always good to go back to certain books. And it had to do with understand how faith and growing come together, and how we should see one another, but definitely land, faith, and creation. I forget the name of the book, but that's an amazing book that had a lot of lessons to learn from. Mm.
I think one of my favorite books is Beloved by Toni Morrison. Mm. Just because she gets you through her like poetry almost in the book. She helps you feel the heart of the pain of what happened in the past.
Could you share about a plant?
Echinacea is very, has so many qualities. The beauty of an echinacea flower and the potency of its medicinal qualities that helps build your immune system. If you've never seen it, it's hard to describe it. The flower itself is beautiful. And I use it in teas. I use it in salve making, and you can use it in tinctures. It has many ways of it being used and for the health of a person. Even just the sight to see it is also beautiful and pleasing.
Sage is coming to mind because it dries so well. It's cleansing. It's good for your sore throat. It's delicious with honey.
And then what about a ritual that you find sustaining?
Prayer. You can have that personal prayer when I wake up. Thank you, God, for guiding us through the night and for allowing us to see another day and to be a part of another day and to be a blessing, even though we're getting so many blessings, whether we see it or we don't see it. We receive so many blessings just from waking up. But we don't think about it. With all those blessings that we're getting, how can we be a blessing, to someone else?
I would say dance, because it's just a way that we can be free and enjoy music together and just laugh. You know, I think we've enjoyed that at Freedom Farm in a number of ways, with family, with friends, with people coming through.
I love it. And Edgar, I love your hat, which says, put God first.
Yes.
Josiah gave him that, our son.
Well, thank you both so much for your presence on campus and just for all of the ways in which our lives have been linked over the past couple of years. It's a great gift and a great joy. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. It's been great to have you as a friend.
Reciprocity.
Reciprocity.
For our guided prayer practice, Jim and I will lead a chant called Put Your Roots Down. We learned this chant from Reverend Chelsea McMillan when she taught it to us one day on the rooftop of Mary House Catholic Worker at our Integral Ecology Circle, and she adapted this chant from Molly Hartwell. We invite everyone to raise your voices in song with us collectively and with everyone else who is also listening and raising their voices together. Somehow we will join together across these headphones and these technological divides, and we will all be one together in spirit as we sing. If you aren't in a space that you can sing and you can just let your voice fly free, you can listen and you can allow the words to come in your body and to just flow through you. Otherwise, please sing with us. I will speak each lyric, and I invite you to repeat after me, either out loud or in your mind. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground.
Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground.
You can hear the earth sing if you listen.
You can hear the earth sing if you listen.
'Cause the sound of the water as it moves across the stones.
'Cause the sound of the water as it moves across the stones
is the same sound as the blood in your body as it moves across your bones.
Is the same sound as the blood of your body as it moves across your bones.
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear the earth sing if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear the earth sing if you listen. 'Cause the sound of the water
as it moves across the stones. Is the same sound as the blood in your body as it moves across your bones. Are you listening? Are you listening? Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear the earth sing if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear the earth sing if you listen. 'Cause the sound of the water as it moves across the stones is the same sound as the blood in your body as it moves across your bones. Are you listening? Are you listening? Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear the earth sing if you listen. Put your roots down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear the earth sing if you listen. 'Cause the sound of the water as it moves across the stones is the same sound as the blood in your body as it moves across your bones. Are you listening? Are you listening?
So thank you again, everybody, for listening, for putting your roots down, for engaging in conversation, for listening, for joining, for just being here and present with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's just, I'm reminded how powerful it is to join in song together.
And yes.
Chant in particular. If anybody's interested in visiting Edgar and Anne at Freedom Farm, they're totally open to that. There are a range of possibilities from just a day trip to, if you're interested, you could explore possibilities like internships at the farm. You know, as you listen to an episode like this, you know, you could really show up physically yes. at these spaces. And gradually, you know, through that kind of encounter, these places become our communities, you yes. know, rather than just places that exist that are inspiring. So I would just encourage people to consider that and just to reach out to Anne and Edgar.
I'm just reminded today of the interconnectivity of all things, right? And if it feels like too much for someone listening right now to go visit the farm, right? Just think about, where are you at right now? What is your community doing? Is there a community garden near you? Can you grow things where you're at, right? All of the insights we heard and learned from that conversation, that powerful conversation with Edgar and Anne, how could that be applied to you in your community, in your context, right where you're at, is yeah. also something we can consider.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the most powerful things that Edgar does when he comes to campus is he'll bring plants, he'll bring eggs from the farm, he'll bring herbs from the farm. One time he created these salves that students could use on their skin, you know, and he handed them out to close out his session. He'll bring seeds, you know, and he leaves this stuff with people so that they can take it and kind of yeah. plant it in their own context. So thank you all. And see you next time.
Yeah, till next time. Signing out. Peace. Under the ginkgo tree.